We're going from the beginning of Judges all the way to Saul this morning, covering a lot of ground as we've been doing this summer. 1 Samuel 8, 4 through 9, then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "Behold, you're old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint for us a king to judge us like all the nations." But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." And Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, "Obey the voice of the people and all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being their king over them. According to all the deeds that they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are also doing to you. Now then, obey my voice. Only you shall solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them." This is the word of the Lord. This summer we have taken our 30,000 foot view of the look of the Old Testament. Yeah, as we study and read through the Old Testament in different times and phases of our life, whether it's here in worship or whether it's on your own, I think the Old Testament can be almost so big when you're reading these different stories that you don't know what you're supposed to do with it. And I think it really helps in a significant way to realize what is going on from the 30,000 foot view. To realize in big, broad ways that this is one story that God is telling us. That the story of humanity is not simply all these different things that God has to react to, but that over all of it, God is doing and working one plan. And actually looking at the book of Judges, a book that, right, has all these great stories when you're growing up. Stories of Samson and Gideon and great conquerings and these mighty judges, to look at it zoomed out and to ask the question, why does God remind us of this story? Why does God tell us a story of the judges? Because we have great heroes and we actually have a lot of failure and brokenness. Now, the setup coming into Judges is as Israel has come into the promised land. Joshua has taken Israel, and Israel was in captivity for 400 years in Egypt. They walked through the desert. In the middle of the desert, they rebelled against God. And yet God restored them and pledged that he would bring this new generation into peace and into the promise of land. And he gives every tribe their land. Everywhere they go, the Lord is with them. Everything they do, the Lord provides. And you get to the beginning of the book of Judges, and what we should expect is that they have seen the Lord be faithful, and so they followed him. But we get to Judges, a chapter in, and Joshua has died, and everyone is doing what is right in their own eyes. They have what they need. They are fat. And I think as the saying will go, they should be happy, but they are not. They are full on the land, full on the promises of God, full on a name, full with armies, and they're unhappy. Over and over, they get the gifts of God, and they're not good enough. They get the iPhone 28, and they're already rumor-mongering about the iPhone 30 because of the problems with the 28. It's called the Judges cycle. The book of Judges has this cycle. It's kind of a rehearsed throughout the book of Judges, and we read it in Judges 2 as the Lord sets it up. He says, here is what's going to happen, and actually, here is what happens. Israel, who has been rescued from their distress, they have been set up on the land to become fat and enjoy those things, for their lives to be satisfied and for it to show. And yet, they fall into distress. They chase after their own eyes, and God rescues Israel from distress. And then they get set up, and Israel forsakes Yahweh, and they do what is right in their own eyes. And it says they go and they serve other gods, man-made gods. Why is the commandment against idolatry so important? Because we are so wont to make God in our image, right? To serve the Baals. The Lord grows angry and gives Israel over to the foreign gods. The people cry out because of oppression. And again, God rescues. He sends these judges. He sends these heroes. And the judge dies. And Israel does what's right in its own eyes. I have this vision of my life. It comes from Saturday morning bike rides. On Saturday mornings, I haven't done it much lately, but there's a group of folks that go and ride out to Westmobile and all these different areas. And one of the rides, you go down south, all the way down to Biolabattery. And along, sitting at the end of one of these driveways, Scott, you may know this guy. He's not there anymore, fortunately. But there was this guy who would sit out at the end of his driveway on like a John Deere tractor, and he would wave at us every Sunday morning. Every Saturday morning, we were going that direction. And I have this vision of actually, and he's 70, mid-70s, 80, retired. I have this vision that that's what I want for my life. I want to have lived life so fully and to sit in Saturday morning and to wave to people and give them joy as they go enjoy God's creation. I want to, and the only thing I might modify is I want to have like an instrument with me. I want to play some music for him, have my cup of coffee, sitting down on the John Deere. Sometimes he has a shirt on, sometimes he doesn't, but you know, doesn't matter anymore. I look forward to that moment. I mean, I think it's called fat and happy. To being full, to having lived a full life, and to being able to say, I have enjoyed it. It was good. I actually think I've already lived most of that life, and yet I, like many of you, we struggle when all is good, when all is well, when we have all that we need to find joy and contentment. We step into the book of Judges and this story, God has given Israel everything they can imagine, and they're unhappy. And we tend to look at the book of Judges like this story that is so far off, these incredible things that happen, and a people who, how could they rebel from God? But it's actually a story of our own lives. In fact, we live at the time where this time in the world is defined by power, by freedom. Each of us, think of it, we have so much of what we have wanted in life. We have accomplished so much of what we have wanted. I have a home. I have a job. I have children. I have a wife who loves me and cares for me. I have so much of it. We have so much of it. And yet, our culture, our time, our place is by far the most unhappiest. In fact, I was reading this and actually heard, I had preached this last week when I was in Daphne, but I'd even listened to a sermon this past week of another friend of mine, pastor, referencing a recent survey done and kind of addressing the problem of men 35 to 50, actually white men 35 to 50, who in our Western world are by far the most privileged. We have the most money, the most health care, we have the most stability in our lives, and how white men 35 to 50's suicide rate has skyrocketed. The people who have had the most have been discontent the most. Seeing our kids, I worked with college students, and the rates of anxiety and psychological disorders, and for that matter also, and actually the second leading cause of death of people between, I think it was 18 and 30, is suicide. On the college campus, those numbers are going up. Kids who have privilege, the opportunity for education to move up, dealing with great, our kids, they deal with anxiety. How can we have so much and be so unhappy? We are living in the time where we have the most. We have more money, and yet, as the great poet said, we have more problems. And I want you to realize that this is not a rant against individualism or personal freedom. But I want you to realize as we open up Judges, it's a story that seems really far off and yet is actually very near. That is, it's seeing that we are just like them, that we have followed after the hunger of our own eyes and it's not working. You see, that it's not about whether we have or don't have things. The problem is that we are wanting more. See, the story of Judges is a story we still wrestle with. We still seek to do what's right in our own eyes. We still want to be, and this is how the ancient world would have seen our lives. We still want to be kings. And it still doesn't work. And here's the beautiful reality of that, is that being the same story, as we open the book of Judges, it also means that we have the same hope. That we still have the same hope. And this morning, what we're going to do is look into Judges and see the hope that God is setting before the eyes of his people, Israel, and the eyes of his church, so that we can see what it means to have a good and a true king. Judges is setting us up to go into Samuel. It's setting us up for something that comes beyond. See, that God, that he is our king. And that he is a king who, unlike us, he's a king of power. It's the first thing we see of God's kingship. He is the king of power. For all our temptations towards control and power, the reality is that in our lives each day, we live so powerlessly, don't we? Christian Lehman and I were having lunch a few weeks ago, and we were kind of rehearsing these things, reflecting on our own lives. Just what I've been saying before, that we have gotten so much of what we ever wanted. The road was paved gold before us in much of our lives. Down to many of the smallest details, we have children, we have homes, we have jobs when we needed them. Not only that, but we've been the influencers, the deciders of what we've done and where we've gone. We've reached for control, and yet we have felt controlled. Have you ever felt that? You're getting everything that you're reaching for, and yet you feel under the control of something else. We feel like the appetites and the hungers were lies that led us on and didn't actually give us what they promised. We thought we had power and freedom, but it was the power and freedom of those appetites that can't be satisfied. And this is not the lament, but I feel this approaching already. I just bought an extra car that I don't need. And so I'm like, okay, I'm officially getting towards the angst of midlife. I know I'm not there yet. And this isn't a lament, but I consider it sanctification, that I have searched for all this, I have looked to arrive, and I haven't. For all the power and control I have, there's exponentially more that I feel out of control of, and that I feel powerless to change. But that's not the God we find in Judges. Judges repeatedly rehearses this story of our rebellion, of our foolishness, of our reaching for power, of our rebellion against him and restoration even out of our rebellion. And at every point, God is at work. At every point, he is in control. During their rebellion, God is planning what he is going to do for them. He is in control even in their enslavement. And he is in control in their rescue. See, what Judges shows us when we look at it from the 30,000 foot view is that Yahweh is the real king with power. That his power is unhindered. It is never relegated. It is never diminished. What he protects, his protection is perfect. When he promises, he always fulfills. What he starts, he always finishes. I think of maybe two things in my life that I started and finished. What he endures, he is never removed from. Do you see the comfort here that the book of Judges gives us when we zoom out from it? That God is in control. And you know, that would be a platitude, except for now we have thousands of years of history that reveal what God's control is. That there is one who, for all of our strugglings and all of our failures to grasp and to be able to handle the things of our lives, there is one who has never let go. There is one who has never taken his finger off the steering wheel. There's one who has never taken his finger off his foot off the gas. That this is his. That God is the king of power. You see, it cuts through the deception of our freedom, the deception of our opportunities that we think make our life life. That we can stop chasing it and fall upon the one who has true power. We get the book of Judges from the 30,000 foot view, and we get to see that Israel, every time they fall upon God, that's what happens. They get peace. They get restored. Their life goes from battle and conflict to rest, literally. We're always going to be unrested when we're reaching for power and freedom, but when we know God's power and we submit to it, what comes is true freedom and real rest. Working with students at South Alabama, I found myself in a lot of ways. I'm a college pastor, but I was also a college counselor. And the story of like freshman year for many college students, especially first semester, and probably especially guys, was just a story of chaos. It is so regular that freshman guys, men, myself included, are struggling in their first semester of school because they've been given a lot of freedom. And their first semester, I would sit down, we get to the end, and they're not sure if they're going back, they're not sure what they're going to do, they know they need to make better grades, and they're like, you know, something needs to change, but I don't know what it is. And I'd sit with them, and I'd say, well, what was your schedule this year? And they'd tell me their academic schedule. I was like, okay, well, when did you study? They're like, I went to the library, son. I was like, well, did you have a schedule? So 15 hours of your week were scheduled. I've talked with y'all with parents about this. This is kind of my illustration. This is a big transition. They had no schedule of their life. They're like, I came to college so that I could do whatever I wanted, and it didn't work. You know, it was just kind of the reality is coming face to face was that actually structure equals freedom. If I can structure my study, then I can enjoy my off time. You know, we sit and we talk about that. If I could decide what kind of, you know, how I'm going to eat, then I'll actually enjoy and not feel tired and groggy and off and on and off and on. If I can restrict myself, if I can receive the no, then I can enjoy what I'm called into. That good structure equals good freedom. And I think we're seeing this in Judges, that living inside the limit of God's power and his will is the only way to freedom. And it's certainly the only way to peace. That's the other thing. So he is the king of power, and God is the king of peace. God's power is set up to bring his peace. I think there are two great deceptions of our own eyes. The first is what we just addressed, that we always overestimate our ability to make ourselves happy. That we can do it. We always overestimate our ability to control and to get what we want. The second deception is that we actually know what we need. That we know what will make us happy. That we know how to bring peace. How's that worked for you? Getting all the things you wanted. How's that worked for you? What do you want now? How's that worked for all the agendas that you've kind of put your life in the order of, political or otherwise? How are they working? How's that working for your family? when you're getting everything that you want to make you happy? How's that working for your kids? How's that working for you with your parents? Is that working for our city? Is that working for our country? How's it working for you? You see, I think there's this deception. We're always overestimating not just our power, but our wisdom. But here's the reality. There's nothing I do in my own wisdom that is not heinously corrupted with my own selfishness and sin. I mean, I think my job in a lot of ways is the application of wisdom. And I'm sorry as I sit and sit in your lives and sit in my own life that all of my wisdom has the brokenness of my pride that goes with it. Except for like the few biblical precepts that I can live out or tell you or point you to, it's always corrupt. There is always the rot of the old man. Even in its slimmest sliver of pride, it's there. And that slim sliver of pride is enough to cause war and to leave irreversible damage in relationships. I'm sorry. But God's perfect power is set up to bring perfect peace. Look at what God does over and over and over. Israel is left for dead. They have sought what is good in their own eyes. It has not worked for them. They are enslaved and captured. And God steps in. God steps in. He bears their burdens. He restores and he heals to make whole. And he sends deliverers who overcome evil. To show who the true king is. To show the king that actually can bring peace. That is Yahweh. That only Yahweh can make true peace. It's what he promised all the way back in Genesis 3. That when the temptations would come, that he would go in to crush the head of the serpent by having his heel struck instead of ours. You see, the Lord, Yahweh, the King of power and peace, he gets bloody in the battle with us. That's what true kings do. That's why when we get, why we read all the way to Saul. Because you see that a true king, what he does is he brings peace through his own blood. And it's what makes Saul such a bad king. He doesn't listen to God. He doesn't know God. He hasn't made God his comfort. And when it comes time to risk everything, Saul risks nothing. He shows just what it means to have a king like all the other nations, to have a weak and a selfish and a God-rejecting king that would also reject the peace of his people. And he doesn't bring peace. And Judges, we're going from Joshua to Saul in just a few minutes because there's something we have to see from this 30,000-foot view that we may not see otherwise. The Judges isn't a book of heroes, but Judges is a book about the hero. Judges is a book about the King of power, the King of peace. And lastly, that this King of Peace is the King after God's own heart. That the King that we need must be a man after God's own heart. In Deuteronomy 17, God knows that Israel needs a king, that they need one who would be with them. In Deuteronomy 17, the Lord sets out the specifications and he says, you are going to have a king, and this king, the king that I have for you, he will make his life in my word. His food will be the gospel. His comfort will be me. He will write out the law, my law, and it will be with him always. And what he will declare and give to you is my power and my peace. What you need is my king. And David comes, and we're going to get to David in the coming weeks. David comes as a man after God's own heart, as 1 Samuel 13 says. But he comes as just a shadow still. That is, he's actually still only half the equation because the true king, he needs to be a king after God's own heart. But he needs something else. See, David is going to, he is after God's own heart, but he is going to show his limits. He still is going to go after Bathsheba. He still is going to murder Uriah. He's still going to be tempted by adultery and dishonesty. Even a king who loves God will not be enough. Because even a king who loves God still needs saving. It's why we need something more than great men. It's why we need something more than John Calvin or Martin Luther or Tim Keller or Lanier Wood or Alec Flint. You like how I put our names next to that, Alec? We need one who is a man after God's own heart. But we also need a king with God's own heart. We need one. I mean, make no mistake, Israel's king has already arrived in Judges. Israel's king has already arrived in 1 Samuel, but he is also coming. In Exodus 15, the Lord prepares Israel. He says, the Lord will reign forever. And as Israel goes throughout their exiles, Isaiah reminds them that the Lord is our king and that he will save us, that what we need is a king after God's own heart. And we need the king. The king with God's own heart. The king of power and wisdom and love and peace. The king who knows truth, who knows peace, and can accomplish it even in a broken and rebellious world. This king cannot simply be a man, but he also must be God himself. See, Judges is telling us we need the king of Philippians 2. The one who would ride into town on a donkey. The one who would be despised and rejected by men. The one who would bear our burdens. The one who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking on the form of a servant, by being born of a human, humbled even to the point of death, and the death of our cross. We need the king who has shed his blood, and that his blood will become our salvation. And the one who by his sacrifice would be exalted at the right hand of God. The name above every name. See, Judges is building in us a hunger for Jesus. There's a hunger that it stirs up. For a people who are out of control, for a people who feel powerless and fearful, who are done with wrestling. That only Christ, or is our cup full? And does it overflow? And does gladness come? Only in Christ will we ever be truly fat and happy. Let's pray.